Fellow Freedom fans, we're back here with the Faith and Freedom Show. David Allen Carmichael at the top of the hour here on the Liberty Works Radio Network, the Eagle 104.3 FM. Later, I'm going to be bringing back this issue of privatization, what it is, and what are the things that we have to contend with. Some of the things that I thought about today and that I've seen with regard to the term privatization, what it means, and when somebody who is doing something that ought to be the government's, but the government has farmed it out for whatever economic mammon, it could be brother-in-law backdoor handshake benefits. I mean, who knows? There's all kinds of things that could happen there, but we're going to check that out. I just will, because I said so before the break, I was going to go to, again, just the health care bill. The debate is on, the debate is hot, and so I'm going to be reading from the bill so that people don't, well, they could accuse me of bearing false witness. But is that what we want to do? Let's read the silly thing. And then if you disagree with what I think this means when I read it, see, I'm just trying to use my simple mind. At first I thought, you know, this thing's not going to touch me. I think I'm excluded from participation. But it may be that this is touching so many things that I might be excluded from healthcare. Or my children may be now completely excluded from being employed, notwithstanding their, or because they are not participants in the voluntary, yes, voluntary, with the SS5 form, participation in the retirement benefit, survivor benefit program, disability, old age retirement survivor disability benefit program. They are not participants. They got a driver's license without having to confess a 9-digit number because they're not participants. What a shocker. Most people don't think that can be done. We have to unveil some things and take the inoculation to the pandemic a dimension that's sweeping North America. And there's a lot of freedoms that come with a healthy mind and healthy choices. Here we go. Health Benefits Advisory Committee. This is out of the health care bill. Is that HB 3200, something like that, whatever it is. It's section 123. It's an important section of the health care bill. I'm going to read from it. In general, there's established a private-public advisory committee. A private-public advisory committee, which shall be a panel of medical and other experts to be known as the Health Benefits Advisory Committee. My problem is when you say private, that could be, I guess they mean, private, it depends on the definition. Private could be just a business that is not a government business, and public would be a government business. Sometimes you'd think public would be the average Joe, but I think they haven't defined these terms. But as I was reading something from a professor at Princeton, just coincidentally before we went on the air today, just moments before we went on the air, he was talking about the difference between private and public. It turns out with this definition, private may be merely a industry commercial entity that is not the government. And public may most likely means the government. A private public advisory committee, which shall be a panel of medical, and you know, in the good old days, public wasn't necessarily the government. The public was the people. We're progressing to where public is the government. When you say the government, it means you, the collective. So our language is evolving. I say devolving. It's going from order to the communist, Marxist, socialist, totalitarian, just strangeness. So, but that, yeah, okay, we're going to try to make sure we stick on substance here. This advisory committee shall be a panel of medical and other experts, the best minds, you see, to be known as the Health Benefits Advisory Committee, HBAC, HABAC, to recommend covered benefits and essential enhanced premium plans. This is what's going on. To recommend covered benefits, it's essentially recommend that which should be the things that every health insurance agency must financially support. So this committee is going to recommend if you, everybody on this in America, universally must fund in utero infanticide, again, as an example, or even physician-assisted suicide as a benefit that must be funded. That means by everybody that pays into it, essentially, are participating in this completely unbiblical, and I think it's horrific things that are going on here. This committee is going to recommend. Now, they're not going to decide. They're merely going to recommend. The Surgeon General, it says in paragraph 2, shall be a member. The other members are health benefits shall be composed of the following, besides Surgeon General, 9 members who are not federal employees or officers and who are appointed by the president. That means people who aren't, if you really look at the employee laws, that means that nobody, that means 9 members who are not working as an employee or 4 as an officer of an employer. That really narrows it down to very few people in America. B, 9 members who are not federal employees or officers who are appointed by the comptroller. Now, that's interesting. Comptroller General of the United States. You know what the comptroller, the general, or the comptroller of the currency, I guess, runs the money system, but comptroller general of the United States. In a manner similar to the manner in which comptroller general appoints members to the Medicare Payment Advisory Committee under the Social Security Act, such even number of members, not to exceed 8, who are federal employees and officers as a president may appoint. My question here and the challenge is, if it's a legitimate function of government, health care isn't, I don't think, to sweepingly control the nation's health care. It certainly is a function of the federal government if they are going to supply medical care or medical funding or subsidy or whatever to its own employees, then it is such their business. So it should be federal employees. It'd be nice to have them as a member of a board. But it should be dealing with that in the public sector, so to speak, being the government's own club. That's my opinion. Such initial appointments shall be made now. Okay, it's going to tell you how when it should be made, 3-year term and all this kind of stuff. I'm going to press on here. And our number here is 888-850-1872. Now, this is what the committee's going to do. Duties. Recommendations on benefit standards. And I'm on page 32 of the health care bill. The health benefits, the HBAC, shall recommend to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, we'll call it the Secretary, benefit standards and periodic updates to such standards. In developing such recommendations, the committee shall take into account innovation in health care and consider how much standards could reduce health disparities, whatever that means. I guess I'll have to figure out what that is, and there's a deadline. Now, listen to this. This is an important thing, and this is why I'm trying to get some commissioners of some of the commissions that are in Florida right now. That's why I'm trying to get Mr. Grayson to tell us about, not just is he impressed that so many people are sharing their views, does he really give a hoot, or do other congressmen or women give a hoot about what the public, why are they having a town hall meeting? Is it a facade, or does it matter? Check this out. It's item number 3. Paragraph 3 on page 33 of the health care bill. Public input. The Health Benefits Advisory Committee shall allow for public input as a part of developing recommendations under this section. You know what? This committee isn't accountable. This committee isn't voted in. They're not worried about the constituents or constituency. That has its influence. That's supposed to suggest or help their motivation, things like that. But they're going to have public input. What if they're all the best minds are put on the 12 best minds in America, all ideologues that they are, that totally have a completely a different perspective than public input? What if 300 million people give input to this committee and the committee has a different opinion? Does the public input matter? So that's why we're going to be searching out a commissioner of a board in Florida to see whether or not these public input opportunities really, what kind of impact do they really have on the person who is on the board who's got to make a determination. Now, this is a recommendation. You see, this is a board based on this health care bill. We're taking it right out of the health care bill. That, again, they're going to be talking about 70% coverage, 85% coverage, or 95% coverage based on a basic plan, an enhanced plan, or a premium plan for healthcare insurance. And again, what they're doing is they're not saying, okay, this is available. If anybody would like to sign up and use the federal government as their healthcare benefits provider, you can do that. We're not going to interfere at all with anybody else. And we're going to let the private industries do their thing, but we're going to make this available for the public. and we're not going to make sweeping controls, then that would be one thing. But that's not what this is. This is universal health care for all Americans. Like it or not, I don't care what your industry or your status, everything's going to be swept up. Universal health care for all Americans. That's it. That's what it says at the very top of this health care bill. It's not like the water company saying, we're going to make this available for anybody who would like to use the water company as the mechanism for their water. Now, we're not going to bill everybody to pay for everybody else's water. See, the health care bill, we're going to make it bill everybody to pay for everybody else's health care. What we're going to do is spread the cost around, stuff like that, for the entire populace. The water company basically charges per use. They charge per use. And I think there is some premium that they'll put on it if you tend to abuse your use, and you'll end up paying a little bit more for that. But so that kind of thing shows up. So the healthcare bills talk about per diem, and that's pretty standard. Now, determination to adopt standards. Now, watch this. The committee that may or may not listen to or ignore the public input on page 35 of the healthcare bill, determination to adopt standards. If the secretary determines to propose adoption of benefit standards so recommended as a package, if they take the recommendation, they shall propose adoption such standards. So what happens at that point, the secretary makes the proposal, listens to the committee, who may or may not listen to any public input, whether it's given or not, it's a whole different issue, and they shall appoint this. Or they can determine not to propose adoption of the standards. The secretary is going to notify that committee in writing of the reasons for not proposing the standards. And that's on page 35 and going into 36 on the health care bill. Contingency. If because of application of paragraph 2B, that's the one where, you know, the secretary is going to, in paragraph 2B, it says, they send back for a further opportunity to modify its previous recommendations and submit new recommendations. So they're sort of like a veto. The secretary vetoes the committee and says, hey, these are my problems with it. Try again. If because of the application of that paragraph, secretary would otherwise be unable to propose initial adoption of such recommended standards by the deadline, the secretary shall, by regulation, propose adoption of initial benefit standards by such deadline. In other words, the secretary has full discretion to do whatever they're going to do. What if the committee, because of public input, said, do not fund in utero infanticide or assisted suicide? What if the secretary didn't like that? This unelected person determines that everybody is going to fund in utero infanticide. The secretary shall provide for publication in the Federal Register. So, and then, of course, in the next paragraph, they're going to talk about when this stuff, the initial benefits package gets adopted. Let's see, cost sharing. Okay. Well, we're going to take a break here shortly, so I don't want to go too much. But I want to go to the next thing that's going to come into play when I start talking about the public privatization conversation. This next section is requiring fair grievance and appeals mechanism, internal claims and appeals process. What's going to happen in the internal claims and appeals process with somebody? You've got access to, in some cases, between you, if you've got a contract with somebody, you can contract with some private health organization. In many cases, you can sue them or make an agreement that you're not allowed to sue them, that you have to go to an arbitrator or something like that. Arbitration or something like that. There's certain things you can contract with. But right here, what we're going to see is, does the government have the authority to mandate that you abandon your rights under the law? You're abandoning your rights of due process. Is this really truly a function of government? If it's truly a function of government, you can't abandon your rights. So we're going to come back and give us an opportunity to review page 37, 38, and a couple other pages here on the actual health care bill. Keep tuning in, the Eagle 104.3 FM. Check out our website at faithfreedoms.org. And again, our number here is 888-850-1872.